Hello, this is the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A lost Roman settlement is found in Silbury Hill's shadow. Kuwaiti archaeologists unearth more Bronze Age finds. While we're on the Bronze Age, a settlement is found in Wicklow in Ireland. Wisconsin State archaeologists cast doubt on the ancient artifacts reported previously. And the first ever dwelling mound or tell is found in Germany. Petrified lightning bolts give us a peek into the ancient climate of Libya. And the Indus Valley civilization is more varied and wider spread than previously thought. English and Irish peoples may be tied closer than they think. And finally, unbrushed teeth can reveal more about ancient diets. Mysterious Silbury Hill has yielded yet another surprise for archaeologists. The 5,000-year-old monument was the base for a large-scale Roman settlement archaeologists had no idea existed. The man-made hill was already 3,000 years old when the Romans arrived in what is now Wiltshire in England, and they set up home beside the road they built between London and Bath. Archaeologists used high-tech equipment that means that they discovered the Roman village without having to put a spade into the soil. The new data shows a village-sized settlement straddling what was the Roman main road where the road crossed the River Kennet. Dr. Neil Linford, English Heritage's geophysicist, explained that the research revealed it was laid out in a typical Roman settlement ladder design, with buildings and small streets lying perpendicular to a central north-south thoroughfare. The discovery was made using an array of highly sensitive cesium magnetometers, which pick up tiny anomalies in the magnetic field caused by the influence of human activities. Bob Bewley, Regional Director for English Heritage, speculated that Silbury may have been an overnight stop on the way to the sacred springs and bathing pools at Bath, but may also have been a Roman pilgrimage site in its own right. Given the sacred value we know Romans attached to sites close to water, it seems impossible that they would not be drawn in the same wake as their prehistoric forebears to Silbury Hill, which lies close to both the Wimborne River and the Swallowhead Springs. The Roman discovery was made as part of a project to stabilise the hill after the top collapsed in 2000. English Heritage announced the work would begin in May and end in September. Kuwaiti archaeologists wrapped up a successful excavation season in Sabaya with new finds, skeletal remains, pottery and beads dating back to the Bronze Age. The important archaeological site yielded several burial mounds late last year and also skeletal remains from some burial pits, which are similar in structure to those found in many other Gulf countries. Some of the burial mounds dating back to the Bronze Age will be restored, and the newly found artefacts will be put on display at the Kuwaiti National Museum. Archaeological excavations in advance of the construction of the Wicklow Port Access and Town Relief Roads have opened up a fascinating window to the past. Archaeologists found a Bronze Age settlement, approximately 4,000 years old. A small circular house or hut was found beside a burnt mound or cooking place. This excavation is now complete. The state archaeologist is casting doubt on claims that an archaeological dig in the northern Minnesota town of Walker, USA, has turned up ancient stone tools between 13,000 and 14,000 years old. Minnesota state archaeologist Scott Anifson, in a report released on Monday, said that the materials found at the excavation site were more likely to have been produced by natural forces such as flowing water or glacial movement. In an 8-page report, he said that the majority of the artefacts did not demonstrate the characteristics that one would expect from humanly produced stone artefacts. Archaeologists found more than 50 objects while investigating a route for the planned road in Walker. The items were found beneath a layer of glacial deposits that had been covered by windblown deposits. An expert said they believed the objects were between 13,000 and 15,000 years old. The Walker City Council have since voted to postpone any work at the site so that it could be preserved for more research. Responding to the report, one of the lead scientists involved in the excavation maintained that the site could still contain evidence for very early human habitation. Additional research at the site is scheduled for this summer. Matt Matson, a biologist and archaeologist working for the Leech Lake Heritage Sites Programme, said they still believe they have culturally related materials there. In his report, though, Anderson also said it was unlikely that people lived in this very uninviting environment of the late glacial age in northern Minnesota. If any of the objects really are stone tools from 13,000 years ago or more, they would be amongst the oldest human artifacts ever found in the North Americas. Anderson thinks that more site work would only confirm the conclusions of his report. If investigators want to pursue it, he recommended a recognized stone tool expert examines the collection. If the expert concludes that they may be real artifacts, he then recommends an outside, unbiased archaeologist, experienced in excavating complex early sites, to be brought in. The long-accepted theory was that the people first arrived in the Western Hemisphere here 11,200 years ago, corresponding with the age of arrowheads found at the 1930s site near Clovis. But a consensus is emerging that some humans arrived thousands of years earlier, even if scientists disagree on exactly when. Anderson's 8-page report is available at the State Archaeologist's Office website at www.admin.state.mn.us/OSA. A 7,000-year-old dwelling mound has been found in Germany, causing a stir amongst archaeologists. It's the first of its kind in Western Europe. By building and rebuilding on the rubble of their own architectural remains, sedentary humans managed to achieve an impressive height. The result of this process, known to archaeologists as a dwelling mound, or tell, is most commonly associated with the Middle East in Iraq. The structures reach a height of 40 metres. They're also known in the Balkans and South America, but definitely not in Germany. Well, at least not until now. Hence, the discovery of a dwelling mound in Saxony-Anhalt has caused something of a stir in the German archaeological establishment. Thought to be 7,000 years old, the oval-shaped mound, which is roughly 100 metres long and 60 metres wide by 1.8 metres high, consisting of clay remains of centuries of previous structures. Discovered during highway construction work, the mound is now the site of harried archaeological activity, with bridge builders breathing down their necks. The archaeologists believe that various rituals took place on the mound, including sacrifices. They found two beheaded young people, and next to them the fragments of a skeleton from a horse, minus the skull and hind legs. Dog skulls and the remains of a calf were also found. One of the young people was wearing a bone bracelet, and the animal skeletons were surrounded by smashed ceramic vessels. For unknown reasons, the mound was abandoned around 5,500 years ago. Then 3,000 years ago, people of the Late Bronze Age came and reoccupied it for another 300 years. It's pure coincidence that the mound has been so well preserved. The recent diversion of a nearby river spared it from erosion. Gansmeier believes there could well be more dwelling mounds in Germany, but they will be hard to find. Perhaps if the bridge builders could move the road a little bit to the left, that would help us. Now, a bit of science, so listen closely. The lightning strikes sand or soil, it melts and fuses grains into features that have long been called petrified lightning bolts. Their scientific name is fulgurites. Fulgurites are branched, thin, hollow tubes, usually 1 or 2 inches in diameter and a few feet to tens of feet long. They're rough on the outside, where sand grains and other materials stick to the molten material, but glassy smooth on the inside, with many bubble holes produced by vaporized gases. They usually are considered mere curiosities, but a recent bit of research put fulgurites to a scientific use to obtain 15,000-year-old climate data. Fulgurites found in the Libyan desert suggest that storms were more common there in the past. Analysis of gas bubbles from one of the glassy tubes confirmed this. The main gases found were carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide and nitric oxide. There was also traces of oxygen, methane, argon and others. For a time, the source of the gases was unclear. They could have come from either the atmosphere or from the ground. Low amounts of argon showed they probably came from vaporized organic material in the soil. If the gases were from the atmosphere, the amount of argon should have been hundreds of times greater. Further analysis of the gases indicated a much different climate from what occurs there today. Rainfall was typical of the Sahel, about 370 miles south, and the ratio of carbon 12 to carbon 13 indicated that what is now desert was once covered by grasses or low shrubs. The fog routes were dated by a technique called thermoluminescence dating. Radiation from both the ground and from space produces changes in the crystal structure of quartz grains that accumulate with time. When carefully heated, the crystal structure returns to normal, but as it does so, it gives off light. The longer the grains were radiated, the more light that's given off. Measurements taken at two different wavelengths, in both ultraviolet and blue, gave close edges. Both indicated the fulmarites were formed around 15,000 years ago. Indus Valley civilization was much more varied and wider than historians believe to date. With extensive exploration and excavation of sites in the upper Indus Valley and the lower Sindh, they have revealed a widespread cultural phenomena which existed at the time. Field researches at Harappan sites, both in India and Pakistan, are leading to fresh interpretations. The Neolithic settlement at Mergar, located within the region of the Upper Sindh, has revealed that human settlement in the Indus region dates back to the 6th millennium BCE. A remarkable complexity in architecture, social stratification, elaborate burial practices, and emerging craft specialisation have been found. There's a call for collective and collaborative efforts rather than individuals for bringing to the fore various aspects of the Indus Valley civilization. A lot has to be done, as we're now beginning to realise how ignorant we are of the understanding of this remarkable civilization. Historians teach us that the inhabitants of Britain and Ireland are mostly descended from different people, the Irish from the Celts and the English from the Anglo-Saxons who invaded from northern Europe and drove the Celts to the western and northern fringes. But geneticists who have tested DNA throughout the British Isles are edging towards a different conclusion. Many are struck by the overall genetic similarity, leading some to claim that both Britain and Ireland have been inhabited for thousands of years by a single people that have remained in the majority, with only minor additions from later invaders like the Celts, Romans, Angles, Saxons, Vikings and Normans. The genetic evidence is still under development, and because only very rough dates can be derived from it, it's hard to weave evidence from DNA, archaeology, history and linguistics into a coherent picture of British and Irish origins as yet. Stephen Oppenheimer, a medical geneticist at the University of Oxford, says the historian's account is wrong in almost every detail. And his reconstruction of events has the principal ancestors of today's British and Irish populations arriving from Spain around 16,000 years ago, speaking a language related to Basque. The British Isles were unpopulated then, wiped clean of people by glaciers that had smothered northern Europe for about 4,000 years and forced the former inhabitants into refugees in Spain and Italy. When the climate warmed and the glaciers retreated, people moved back north. The new arrivals in the British Isles would have found an empty territory, which they could have reached just by walking along the Atlantic coastline, since at the time the English Channel and the Irish Sea were still land. This new population, which lived by hunting and gathering, survived a sharp cold spell called the Younger Dryas, which lasted from 12,300 to 11,000 years ago. Much later, some 6,000 years ago, agriculture finally reached the British Isles from its birthplace in the Near East. Agriculture may have been introduced by people speaking Celtic, in Oppenheimer's view. Although the Celtic immigrants may have been few in number, they spread their farming techniques and their language throughout Ireland and the western coast of Britain. Later immigrants from northern Europe had more influence on the eastern and southern coasts. They too spread their language, a branch of German. But these invaders' numbers were also small compared to the local populations. Oppenheimer calculates, in all, about three-quarters of the ancestors of today's British and Irish populations arrived 15,000 to 7,500 years ago, when rising sea levels split Britain and Ireland from continental Europe, and also from each other. Ireland received the fewest of the subsequent invaders. Their DNA makes up about 12% of the Irish gene pool. Oppenheimer estimates, and also DNA from invaders accounts for 20% of the gene pool in Wales, 30% of it in Scotland, and about a third in eastern and southern England. Other geneticists say Oppenheimer's reconstruction is plausible, though some disagree with the details. Several said that genetics methods did not give precise enough dates to be confident of the certain aspects, like when the first settlers actually arrived. Oppenheimer's population history of the British Isles relies not only on genetic data, but also on the dating of language changes by methods developed by geneticists. Oppenheimer's relied on the work by Peter Foster, a geneticist in Anglia Ruskin University, to argue that Celtic is a much more ancient language than previously supposed, and that Celtic speakers could have brought knowledge of agriculture to Ireland when it first appeared. Historians have usually assumed that Celtic was spoken throughout Britain when the Romans arrived, but Oppenheimer argues that the absence of Celtic place names in England makes this unlikely, as words for places are particularly durable. Ancient tartar-encrusted teeth may be a biological goldmine for scientists thanks to new technique for extracting food particles from teeth that once belonged to prehistoric humans. The method already has solved a mystery surrounding what early coastal Brazilians ate. In the future, similar studies may reveal clues about other ancient diets, particularly in areas where little plant preservation from earlier times survives. There is great potential for dental tartar analysis in past populations that inhabited tropical regions, where it could reveal what an individual ate in the days, weeks, or months before death. Evidence suggests some prehistoric populations cleaned their teeth using fibrous food and shell fragments as natural abrasives, but many groups simply let nature take its course. Now, I'm not suggesting that you don't brush your teeth, but do think about these future archaeologists looking into working out your diet. While you're thinking about that, can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK Heritage Calendar, Library and Guidance section, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. Remember, more can be found at Stonepages. That's news.stonepages.com. And of course, if you're thinking of travelling abroad and working in archaeology this summer, why not have a look at Past Horizons, www.pasthorizons.com, with over 330 opportunities to work on archaeological excavations and surveys around the world. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return to us again next week.